is URN University Radio Nottingham.
Hi, welcome to 12 Years, URN's climate change show. This week we'll be covering the climate strikes and Greta Thunberg's influence. I'm here with Ben and Owen, and we're going to talk about the climate strikes and Greta Thunberg's influence. So what are your opinions on the climate strikes, and do you think they're a worthwhile investment of people's time?
Well, I'd say pretty clearly they're a worthwhile investment of people's time, in that obviously any time off school or college or whatever educational institution is always an extreme negative for the entire population and society at large, but at the same time I'd say a larger negative for society is probably the planet dying and, you know, everybody having nowhere to live and horrible weather conditions that would kill us all. So overall I'd say it seems a pretty logical jump of reason to have a few days off school to kind of campaign it all, and I guess it's more logical than, because a more direct way of striking that would be more effective would be make people take days off work, especially essential jobs like emergency services and all that. However, obviously that's just not viable because people can't duck that much salary, and you can't really have the ambulance service just not show up one day because it wouldn't be very good for us all.
It's interesting to say that, though, because from what I've seen in the climate strikes, in London especially, there was, you know, blocking of the roads, blocking of the tubes. And you're alienating a lot of people because they can't get to work, who can't invest themselves in these strikes because they can't afford to take the time off work. And ultimately, the message is lost because the only thing people are left feeling is, I've lost out on money today. And realistically, working class people aren't really the biggest contributors of climate change. There are the rich people with their factories. And
their workers, horrible wage cages.
And what would you say to people who? What are both your opinions on perhaps like specifically Greta as a leading figure? What do you think Exiles considers itself not to be a hierarchical movement? But what do you think of her as this kind of like leading figure? Like, do you think she's an effective figure? Do you think it's like good that she's so young?
I think it's good that they don't view themselves as hierarchical because she's become a figurehead more than anything, so it's kind of happened naturally. She hasn't been artificially made the head of the movement. People have kind of rallied behind her because she is an inspiring figure and because she is good in a leadership role for a 16-year-old, realistically. She's doing a very good job. So I'd say, there's not really much negative you can say about her apart from she doesn't have a right to blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, in the great scheme of things, do any of us ultimately have a right to participate in making a planet uninhabitable for future generations? Probably not. Who has a right to do anything, really? Why should Greta Thunberg, you know, not be allowed to speak on environmental issues, and yet Boris Johnson's allowed to determine, you know, laws within our country, you know?
Well,
who determines these things?
I do have a great deal of respect for her, you know, what she's done. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of dedication for someone that young. I mean, you know, at 16, I wasn't getting out of bed on a weekend. I was, you know, playing video games. I wasn't campaigning to change the world. But I do think there's an element of, it is very easy for climate denialists and sceptics to really attack Greta on not her policies and the changes she wants, but on who she is. Because ultimately she is a child. That is a very easy sort of pull the rug under their feet and be like, oh, well, she's a child, she doesn't know what she's saying. So it's very easy for sceptics and denialists who pride themselves on facts and logic to just ignore her. Which I think, is it XR? If XR wants to really appeal to a broader demographic and get people involved who perhaps, even though it's wrong really that they have to do this, but bring in people who are perhaps older, perhaps have more academic
business as well.
I'm saying more like academic backing, bringing in doctors and professors who can bring in this element of Greta is speaking on our behalf, but we agree with her and we are in the spotlight agreeing with her.
I get that.
Because I've read a couple of articles about stuff like saying that Greta, I read one that was comparing Greta to this American like guy who was some kind of like he'd invented this technology. He was around her age and invented this technology that would enable people to live a more sustainable lifestyle. And people were kind of saying, what she's pushing for is not realistic. Yeah. Like, she's, you know, she's saying all this stuff like everyone needs to try and be more sustainable, but where, how, what, like, can you actually, like, how do you get there?
Yeah. So
what do you think about that in relation to the climate strikes? Do you think they're actually, do you think they're actually an effective way of protesting? Do you think there are more effective ways we could kind of get people's awareness about this?
Well, clearly, like, there's absolutely no indication there is any better way, because I think at this point we've tried pretty much everything else, including every means of peaceful, passive resistance and political kind of, you know, using the political system to create change. It's just not working, ultimately. At the end of the day, what other means are there that would be better? I mean, even if you argue that what Greta's doing is not that effective, is there any other way? What else do we do at this point? What she's doing is kind of a final resort. Okay, we'll just stop society if that's, you know, the only way to get people to take notice. So what do you do beyond that, apart from become more passive and ultimately not solve the problem?
Yeah, it does feel like there's only two routes that could have big, wide-scale change, and that is either government regulation or people banding together. And quite frankly, Greta's done a lot more than some government regulation in terms of getting people aware and getting people acting, which, you know, good on her.
Yeah.
She gets under boomer skins. I love it.
Who can trust the government to, you know, work against their own oil interests to encourage people to be more environmentally friendly? You kind of have to rely on the people. Like, what else do you do beyond a homegrown protest movement like Greta's?
Well, it's sort of like the straws thing, where how it contributes like 0.0-something% to all the plastic in the ocean.
Yeah.
But it's like the government's big pat on the back.
Corporations and everything.
Big pat on the back, being like, oh, yeah, look,
we've introduced plastic straws.
Whereas actually there's much bigger things they could do but choose not to do.
Yeah, it's because, you know, I think it's something like over 70% of all waste in the coral reef is, you know, corporate waste, industrial waste, which is unsurprising. But ultimately what we need is this is the thing. I think we're in a way kind of misinterpreting it by saying that Greta will create change or the government will create change, when what's actually happening is Greta's trying to create change in the government, because the government just won't do these things on their own. So I think we need very much people like Greta to kind of scare the government and force them to, you know, take out the will of the people, so that, you know, corporations and bankers and, you know, massive tax evading companies can be held up to a higher environmental standard, because ultimately we can't do that. The government have to, but we have to make the government.
And what would you say to claims that it's, because I've heard lots of people debate different parts of how we can be more sustainable. Do you think it should come from a more individual standpoint, or we should be like lobbying large corporations? Do you think it should be, do you think the individual actually has that much of an impact
on every practical level? Frankly, no. If you look, like, I remember when we were at Extinction Rebellion in London a few weeks ago, we were given a pamphlet that had, like, every action you can take to reduce CO2 emissions in your lifetime, like, going up. And, like, honestly, it was so ridiculously pathetic. Like, everything, like, throwing away plastic straws and, like, turning all your lights off in your house was literally nothing. The only things you can do as an individual are have fewer kids, because overpopulation is one of the main causes of the environment. It's true. It's true. The environmental crisis is primarily being brought on by massive human overpopulation, or eat less meat or be a vegetarian or vegan, because farming animals takes up way more space than farming plants and trees and that, and produces a massive amount of methane in and of itself. Everything else is virtually, like, you know, pointless. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, even if every single person on Earth did all of those other things apart from the kids and the become a vegan thing, we wouldn't be enough. All of us together would not be enough. You have to target the corporations. There are over 70% of the waste in the coral reef. Like, if all of the rest of us stop throwing up all our plastic for the rest of our lives, 70% of it's still going in there. That's enough.
So you don't think that we should be?
I think we should, but it's worth it. But you've got to bear in mind, it is minimal compared to the corporations.
I'd have to say as well that it's unfair to place the blame on individual people. Obviously, we all live lives that are quite indulgent and have this negative effects on the environment, but a lot of people can't afford or don't really have the time and energy to make these big lifestyle changes necessary. Mm. Like, I've not done it, but I feel like going vegetarian, going vegan, it's a big deal to completely change up your diet and what you eat.
It can be expensive, especially.
And expensive as well, whereas, you know, putting the blame on someone who eats meat is it's minuscule compared to like the actual systems in place that are causing all this pollution.
The amount of waste from car companies.
Yeah, exactly.
So what would you say is the best, where should we go from here?
What Extinction Rebellion is doing is not a useful or valid way of protesting climate change, or is not actually making good progress, and then not offer any valid alternative whatsoever. Like, I'm yet to hear anyone say anything apart from what they're doing, which is peaceful, disruptive protest, and the fact they are causing such a stir and getting so much negative press, I think, is indicative of the fact it is working. Because their goal is to disrupt society and to force people to examine the way they're living and, you know, genuinely start a conversation. They've done that. It's indisputable they've done that. Even if you hate them, you know, you've got to admit they've done that. So
there should be some sort of thing where it's accessible to people who can't afford to strike or can't take time off, so that they can, you know, involve themselves in these Extinction Rebellion things, but without having to take the time off school. Because, you know, for a lot of people, it's just not an option.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It is sort of a bit of a middle-class thing to be able to say, I'm not going to
go to work and school. Yeah, exactly.
I'm just going to fob it off.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of I think generally the strikes do work because, let's be real, a lot of the areas they are targeting do tend to be quite middle-class, and they do tend to be business areas and bits of Canary Wharf. Where was it? They were primary stationed in London this time, Trafalgar Square.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not really disrupting poor people. But, I mean, yeah, they do have to be cautious, I'd say, at the very least. Particularly, like, obviously, recently with that big subway or train disruption they caused, where they got, like, beaten up and attacked and assaulted.
Oh, and they were on top of the tube.
That was just a terrible mistake. They should not have done that to begin with, because that's targeting poor people.
And it gives the movement a bad name.
Although I would question it. No one kind of looked at the other angle of that, which is, okay, so Extinction Rebellion, bad for disrupting work, traffic, train, need to get to work. Okay, they bad for that. But at the same time, no one was ever like, is it not bad that we assaulted and tried to lynch them so we could get to work? That's the degree to which we have to, you know, get our money,
like,
get to work.
It's two sides, isn't it? It's two sides.
It is. But imagine if, like,
I'm not arguing, but it's two sides to. It's a problem because it's like, you know, people would argue that it was justified because they provoked that.
But is that not a sign that maybe something is wrong in our society that we do think it's justified to attempt to lynch someone because they're stopping you getting to work on time?
But then the issue is you don't get to work on time and people won't get fired.
Yeah.
Things like that. So
I know, first of all, I'd argue, like, there should be nowhere, and surely to God there's nowhere in this country where if you say, my train was held up by Extinction Rebellion, it's in the news, they're going to be like, all right, dude, yeah, we'll let you be, like, 20 minutes late today, whatever that'll do. Like, no, it's just people need that money. People need that money so badly they will literally lynch you for it if you stand in their way, even for a good cause. And I think that's quite a troubling message about our society, really.
Well, because it comes back to them, like, all the waste that corporations dump in the ocean. You know, it's profit over, like, morality, I'd say.
Human life.
And
common decency.
You know, realistically, a lot of companies make enough money where they could probably put in more environmentally safe measures, but they don't.
I mean, it's not even that they don't.
I mean, really, if you're a company, you can't you, realistically?
It's not even that they,
unless you're a tiny company on the level of, like, you know, small family-run business, which means, realistically, you're not contributing to the environment.
Jeff Bezos has more money than we have seconds in our life.
Yeah.
But he can't, like, I don't know, take some plastic out of his Amazon boxes.
Yeah, everything has to be wrapped in 700 boxes.
I know, well, this I find baffling. So the things like with Amazon boxes being, you know, wrapped in loads of stuff and clothes being overwrapped, do you think it's kind of, in a way, more expensive for companies if they're just paying for more?
This is the thing, no, because the system is set up in a really bizarre way whereby actually selling things for better value is normally less good value for the company. It's usually worse for the actual company or corporation. In our society, we have all these bizarre, complicated, convoluted fiscal terms and kind of systems in place that make it really difficult to understand, but the core of it is basically our companies, we have this misinterpretation where we're like, companies could be environmentally friendly, why aren't they? It's not that they're, like, not environmentally friendly. Companies, like, are not neutral. They want profit. And the fact is, profit tends to run directly opposing to what is environmentally friendly and sound and good. And these companies will never go with what is environmentally sound and decent and good, because they do not care. They care about profit because they are companies and corporations. So at the end of the day, like, The big example I'm thinking of is enforced scarcity, which is a scary concept to begin with, the idea that we kind of create scarcity in our society so that things can be sold for a higher price so we can keep certain things
like
as
diamonds.
Luxury. Like diamonds. But more, like enforced scarcity tends to be used more in terms of like big industrial goods, like the biggest ones, cars. So a company like Ford could, you know, they manufacture hundreds of thousands of cars a year. Loads of these cars are perfectly drivable, perfectly safe, but they don't quite meet the Ford regulations in terms of there'll be something slightly off in the sizing, maybe like a slight colour gradient difference, something slight and different and purely aesthetic, oftentimes completely invisible. If it's either a car like that or a car where they've overshot their target, like production estimates, they will just get rid of it.
Because that's like too much.
They dump them in India. Literally dump them in a big field in India. And it's like, oh my God, these companies are not just not environmentally friendly, they are actively environmentally evil a lot of the time. These companies have got to be kind of tackled and stopped by governments themselves.
Yeah, I'd have to agree there as well. Like, there are a lot of things that companies could do if they had the morality, but they lack it. Yeah. And I feel that
they are doing things
that is
negative.
Something that is going to be very difficult to change. It's so deeply entrenched in, like, capitalist culture, especially American. Like, I feel like it's encroaching in British culture as well now. It's really starting to take hold a bit, and it's quite sad to see that it's sort of this profit rules over everything element that is prevalent, that is what a lot of our environmental problems stem from. These ideas that you go for the cheapest, like, resources and get them in the cheapest way. And, you know, it's like palm oil's really cheap technically, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the Amazon, but the devastating effects of obtaining it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, just use a different oil, man. Come on.
Just don't do that.
Well, thank you for your time.
I'm Scott. I'm a chemistry PhD student.
I'm Rowan, and also a chemistry PhD student.
So you guys are involved in the XR movement in Nottingham, right? So what are your opinion about the... So obviously there's been kind of a lot of controversy about XR strikes and the climate strikes, especially in the US at the moment. What would you say to naysayers of those strikes? What would you say about the effectiveness of them?
So there hasn't ever been a social change in history that hasn't been precipitated by mass action, mass civil disobedience. So if to those who would say, you know, this isn't effective, this isn't the right way to go about it, try to give me an alternative that has actually worked at some point.
I think an issue that a lot of, not just climate change deniers, but people who perhaps aren't supporters of strikes have, is the fact that it's mainly involving young people, you know, skipping school and things. What would you say about that? I know it's a difficult issue. People who obviously don't support Greta because she's very young. About issues of people skipping school, things like that, is it an effective way? Is it unnecessarily disruptive?
I think they're threatened by younger people enacting this change. They either felt like it's challenging the status quo and people should just go about their business and like go to school and do all the things that they did. I mean, yeah, it's really difficult because like these children are making a huge sacrifice and these young people, lots of people want them to just kind of ignore the issues so they don't have to think about it. And these young people are bringing it to the foreground and they can't avoid it anymore.
I mean, I'd also say it's not unusual for young women to be guiding this, to be leading this, you know, if you know, Joan of Arc, and there was a list that I had before, but throughout history, it's actually a, when things go tits up, then it's very often that you have young women, 14, 15, 16 year old girls, leading this charge. So it's got this long and honorable tradition. So, and you know, to say that, oh yeah, they're too young to do this, I think that doesn't make any sense, because they're the ones that are going to be affected, and they're unencumbered by this sort of boxing in of ideas and stuff like that. So I think they're actually exactly the right people to be doing so.
And with every new generation, there is new social change, there's more awareness. The people who are leading these strikes have grown up with the internet their entire life, all this access to information and communication. And this means that they're just like, more empathetic to these kind of causes, and they're more aware. And again, I think it's just old people.
What's your personal experience with, I don't know, striking, kind of disruptions of society been? Would you say the boys that we were talking to before were kind of talking about how we can change things? It needs to be corporations that are made aware of things. So do you think that things like striking are an effective way of kind of encouraging change?
I guess, yeah. I mean, my experience of this, just small background then, I started getting involved in Extinction Rebellion in April. I'm a bit too old for the school strikes, but yeah, started involved in Extinction Rebellion anyway, and haven't been involved in various ways, both in London and also locally. And as far as actual civil disobedience, I glued myself, allegedly, to the Department for Transport to protest their inaction on decarbonization of transport, which needs to happen extremely rapidly. I was also involved in the notorious and controversial Tube Action. I've had a fair amount of involvement. My experience of what it has, my personal experience has been, in April we went down to London for 10 days, had massive disruption, and the MPs actually came out and talked to us, which is something that you don't usually have. You don't have MPs going out and talking to a group of people that are just marching through the street. Mm. When you sit in front of Parliament and say, we're not moving until you come out and talk to us, then they actually will. Secondly, we had a declaration of a climate emergency 8 days after we left, as well as a target for carbon neutrality by 2050. Apart from that, I just read an article in The Guardian stating that a mass majority, I believe 2/3 of the UK, supports carbon neutrality by 2030. That wouldn't have been the case 6 or 7 months ago. Mm. That wouldn't have existed before then. And even conservative voters, about half of them, support a 2030 plan for carbon neutrality, which is against their party. So the part that the Tory government wants it by 2050. So there's been, I guess the effect has been actual changes in government policy and changes in public opinion. I think it has been effective.
So I was I went to one of the Fridays for Future that was organised in Nottingham, and it was amazing to see so many young people there. And I think one of the aims of striking throughout history, from like the miners' strikes and everything, is economic disruption. And unfortunately, because we do live in this like capitalist hell, the only way, well, one of the most effective ways to strike it is to affect the profits. And that's another thing that Extinction Rebellion does and did do. Throughout the October event, which I attended, and was arrested for allegedly breaking Section 14. There are so many people there, and it did cause this, all these issues, and well, not necessarily issues, but all this disruption, and regular people are affected, which is, I think, is a big criticism. It's quite hard to make this, but that's something that Extinction Rebellion and most people who strike do try and think about, and do try to hit the people who are in charge. Like you were saying with the people who talked earlier about striking against industry, those are the people who are, well, those are the industries that are causing the most disruption to our planet. And the way to target them is this huge mass disruption, which is a focal point of XR.
And what would you say, looking at the strikes and Greta as a figure, what would you say about, a lot of people seem to stop at the point of criticising her? They don't even get onto stuff like XR and climate strikes because they have an issue with Greta as a figure. I've read quite a few articles kind of accusing her of being unrealistic. What would you say about that? Issues with her age and also, I think, older white male perspective, but like, people seem to have an issue with her rhetoric, how it's not realistic.
I tend to sort of ignore the detractors quite a bit. So, but just to clarify, if people accusing her of being unrealistic about what she's saying about what's happening.
Yeah, I think they feel like her aims aren't succinct. So that these articles I've read around the topic, that she doesn't give accurate examples. She's more philosophical than realistic. Generally, okay. What some naysayers have said.
I mean, I guess I don't see that lack of realism. I make materials for carbon dioxide capture, so a big part of what I do is actually read the climate. science. She's not, when she talks about starvation and food shortages and death through heat stress and all these sort of things, that's not her going to hyperbole, that this is what we're heading for. So, and that's predicted by the IPCC, who have with their conservative estimates, as well as other bodies that study and predict climate outcomes. So perhaps if you could say that she's very emotional about it, but I don't think it's a disproportionate response to the collapse of society.
I think another thing that's like important is that Greta's gonna, and all the people she's speaking on behalf of, are gonna have to live through this. They're most likely to die of climate change than old people are gonna die of old age. And there have been other people, as well as Greta, people who've been kind of saying this for years, before her, for example, Autumn Peltier. She's a water protector from Ontario in Canada, and other Indigenous people. And I think it's really good to have a figurehead like Greta, because she's bringing this to media attention, but she's not the only person that's doing that. And I think the criticisms of her are unfair and prejudiced.
And do you think it's kind of unfair, one criticism of the XR movement is perhaps that, not necessarily from kind of a conservative point of view, but more that allegedly it's not effective because it doesn't include... I think basically there's a proportion of people kind of claim that it's not an inclusive movement, that it's mainly, obviously, you know, like rich white hippies, that kind of thing. Do you think there's a way that XR can maybe change its image? Does it need to? Is that a valid criticism?
I think it's the way that people are perceiving XR, but I think it's like over half of the founding members are from working class backgrounds. It isn't just rich people. It is, at the moment, white people are the figurehead of it, or not necessarily the figurehead, but the ones that portrayed. And there is huge work within XR to be more inclusive. We're reaching out to different communities. We're trying to have different people from like POC, BME backgrounds talking at the October Rebellion. There were all of the speakers who came, pretty much all the speakers who came to talk at the roadblocks and other things, were either people of colour from different minority ethnic backgrounds. So there's a huge drive for it, and obviously there are going to be criticisms, but I think what's going on in the media is people are criticising what we look, who's there, rather than what we're actually doing.
And just to speak to that, about the people that are speaking, that are people, persons of colour, that's actually a policy ingrained within the principles and values of XR, about elevating the voices of the oppressed. So that's not an accident, like that we actually try to do.
Mm.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's mostly white, and I wouldn't say mostly middle class. I think that's a misconception. That's changing, and we have policies implemented in place to change that. Even on sort of the local level, I've just been in conversation with somebody from the Tamil Society here at the university, and you know, talked about her to her a little bit about Extinction Rebellion, and she very much wants to push the Tamil Society, as well as the British Asian sort of society networks, into collaborating with us. But it can't come, I don't think you can effectively say, okay, you know, I'm not part of this community, let's like drag them in. You need them to come in, and you need to facilitate them coming in.
Another point that I was discussing with some people was the idea that maybe it's not effective. Well, I think people argue that it's not really effective trying to encourage people to make day-to-day life changes. Things like, one person was saying, the only real changes you can make in your life that would make a difference in terms of a sustainable lifestyle are either going vegetarian or vegan or having less children. And they feel like things like the government banning plastic straws, which accounts for less than 0.1% of the waste in the ocean, isn't actually an effective use of our resources, and should we be more focused on large corporations and that kind of thing? Do you think perhaps things shouldn't be focused on the individual? And I think the problem is then that people maybe see that as a reason why not to engage with the movement.
Yeah, I mean, one of XR's things is like, it's not about personal change so much as system change, and that's what we advocate for. There's only so much one person can do, and yeah, it's like, oh, if we reduce our plastic and things, that's great, and we all told is kind of like the minimum we should be doing, but that isn't all we should be doing. And that's why we do all these like disruptive actions and non-violent civil disobedience to force the government to actually make these changes, because they have the power, they have the resources, but they're spending it on pointless things.
Yeah, this is the responsibility for this is proportionate to power.
Yeah.
So you know, I as a single PhD student that, you know, don't own a company and, like, you know, live in a house, yeah. I have a certain amount of power to make a very minute change. But, you know, the sort of the billionaire class of the world has much greater power. So yeah, one thing I would speak to as well, though, is although Extinction Rebellion does not expressly advocate individual change, that we don't, to be honest, I think that's a lie that's been taught to us for the benefit of people that actually do have the power to make change and who are causing the biggest part of the problem. That, you know, if we all make these little changes, like, you know, maybe use a biodegradable cigarette filter or, you know, buy a hybrid, then it's going to be fine. I think that's a lie that's been taught to us. So, but although Extinction Rebellion does not advocate those individual changes in lieu of systematic change, I have noticed from talking to people within Extinction Rebellion, people that are coming into Extinction Rebellion, that by the virtue of being part of this movement, they start to make even more radical individual changes.
Another thing with the government and different companies saying, oh, if you just make small changes, that's another way to push products. And it's another way to enforce this individualistic society we live in. And if you come together as part of XR and you meet people who are like-minded, the biggest thing we can do is all join together and actually do something. And all this non-violence and we'll do this obedience rather than, oh, I'm going to buy a metal straw, I'm going to buy this plastic one, I'm going to buy this wax wrap or something.
Yeah. Because I know I talked to my mum, I remember, about XR. She's obviously very supportive of change. Mm-hmm. But I think she, as part of an older generation, an issue that my parents have, who have always been very keyed in about this kind of thing, but they said the actual movement is, and my parents are also from a very left-wing standpoint, so it surprised me they thought this, but they felt like the XR movement was aggressive because of the way perhaps it went about things. Things like tube action aren't effective, they argued those kind of points, and said that they feel like education is the best way of making change. Do you think that's true? Do you think actually it's got to the point where that's not the only thing we can do anymore? We need to be doing everything we can.
So I was heavily involved with the tube action. I didn't get arrested for it, surprisingly, but I pulled the alarm at one of the stations. Perhaps, so the aggressive I don't think is necessarily the right word. I think that what they're seeing is an escalation in nonviolent tactics that make people uncomfortable. And what I would say is, people, even I, you know, somebody that did something fairly drastic, I don't fully allow myself to internalize the extent to which we're in a crisis, the extent to which everything is dying.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of where that comes from, a lot of where people's sort of fear or reticence to get on board with actions like that, which actually aren't that drastic. And I mean, we would delay trains for an hour.
Well, in comparison with it, you can compare it to other movements, which are arguably just as valid, but it's a similar rhetoric. Yeah, so it shouldn't be.
Yeah, so I guess people, what I think is people that have that sort of very visceral rejection of these sort of actions, I think they haven't fully internalized what state we're in. And so, yeah, but what I would say is this is an emergency. We have to sound the alarm. We've been sounding the alarm by blocking roads. And by the way, that was controversial at the beginning with an XR. It was controversial in the beginning of XR about getting arrested. Mm. And so those sort of when you perform nonviolent direct action, you have to increase the amount of disruption, because if you stay blocking the roads, then the media gets used to that. The government gets used to that. They get plans in place. You know,
it goes out of the media.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like in April, they would take hours to unglue somebody. Mm. Now they have specialist ungluing teams to remove people within like 10 minutes. So you have to increase you have to remain nonviolent, but you have to increase the impact of your tactics. You have to increase the amount of disruption. And that's not comfortable. It's not comfortable for me as, you know, as somebody that was part of that sort of action. But if it's comfortable, then it's probably not effective.
I think another thing about the education as well, like once people do actually know the facts and are aware of everything, it's really impossible to ignore them. And one of the things that the media does and our education system as well is hugely decrease the severity of the things that people are saying. So they're not saying like, you know, we have less than 10 years. Well, they say that, but people here, we have less than 10 years to save the planet. But we all need to be aware of how horrifically terrifying this all is. And the same as what Scott said, when I think deeply about what's happening, it's terrifying. And I get like in a really weird mental space. When we have the opportunity to educate people, and if we can change curriculums and things, that's great. But we also need to be doing this environment disrupting and, as Scott said, escalating it, sounding the alarm more and more until we can't be ignored.
And finally, what would you say to students in Nottingham, for example? What's the best way they can be more sustainable, help with, you know, the climate crisis that we have?
I don't care if you recycle. Come join XR. We have recycle, but that's not the most important thing. We have a new members meeting this Wednesday at 7? Thursday. Sorry, that's a different meeting. This Thursday at 7, we have a new members meeting in room E7 in the Teaching and Learning Building. I'm going to welcome you tell you a little bit about Extinction Rebellion and hopefully get you some jobs to do, because we need all hands on deck and we're all crew.
So if you check out our social medias, if you just search for Extinction Rebellion University of Nottingham, also the SU page. Another thing is just do some research, check out Extinction Rebellion website. There's a Heading for Extinction talk on there. Get involved with the school strikes.
So the other thing is, if you do want to get in touch and you want to know more, you want to know more about maybe what you can do to help, we have a email address, and that's xruon@protonmail.com.
That's xruon. I'm here with Rebecca from The Big Picture. We're going to chat a bit more about Greta's involvement with strikes. So what do you think about the encouragement of strikes throughout Greta's movement, especially school strikes? I think that's been more focused on recently, with more than 3,000 people gathering in the shadow of the University of Iowa on Friday afternoon to hear her speak.
I think the thing with the school strikes at the moment, which is actually a bit of a problem, is that they've stopped being as effective as what normal strikes would be. All the teachers are getting involved as well, so this is stopping causing any kind of disruption. Instead of going on actual strike, a lot of students end up spending their day just outside the classroom, still having lessons or something similar. So I think the disruption aspect is almost gone. I suppose in some way that's good, because it means that there's a large sense of support for this campaign. But I think calling it a strike is a little patronising for people that are going on strike from their companies that are putting them under a lot of pressure or are not giving them the right amount of money. For example, the University of Nottingham has actually predicted the staff are going to be going on strike at the end of November. You wouldn't consider that strike to be the same as the school strike, where it's just a bunch of school kids peacefully walking out, holding up banners and being supported by the teachers and the institution they're supposedly striking from. So I think to call it a strike is dangerous, because it infantilizes the people that are going on strike for real reasons. And I worry that people will start thinking of a strike and they'll be like, oh, but that's, you know, it's what the kids do. Mm. It's what the school children do. But this is different. If you want to call it a strike, then make it disruptive. Mm. It is meant to be disruptive.
Do you think it should maybe be called something else as well? Because it's different, isn't it? Because they're protesting an outside force, not the idea of education.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if the, you know, lecturers here are striking, mm-hmm. but they're protesting their own wages here. That's the point, isn't it?
If the school children went on strike, it would mean that they had a problem with the institution that they're a part of, which is the school. And I know they're trying to say the problem with the institution is the government, the wider institution, but it won't make a difference to the actual economy of the government and where the money is going if they're going on strike from school. The message doesn't really get across. I think they're hopefully will eventually come more effective ways to get this message across to the government. And yeah, like a more disruptive movement. You can't be calling it a strike if it's not disruptive.
But do you think, because it says here that in September it was predicted that 150 countries would join in her strike. I would say that's quite far-reaching internationally. I think the exile movement is very focused on, I don't like the word first world, but our Western world.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really focus on, and that may be because we are the countries that essentially can do the most to turn it around. Countries. But like, should we be focusing more on assisting people in less well-off countries and continents?
Yeah, we should be working on assisting people who are not going to go on climate strike because they need their education and they appreciate it.
And do you think Greta could maybe appeal to that more? Do you think she has a very, I think a lot of people have maybe accused her of having a very like kind of one, like a very tunnel vision when it comes to this. She has a one-sided side of things.
To be fair to her, if she tried to appeal to people from less economically developed countries, she would be called patronising. People would say, you know, she's belittling the problems of other people. She's not considering the real issues. And I think, yeah, I don't think there's actually much that can be done from Greta. And I think this is where we need to see government stepping in. But the climate crisis is the fault of the more economically developed countries. It's the fault of the Western powers that are plugging ridiculous amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere. They're the ones that are polluting the oceans. We should not be putting more pressure on less economically developed countries, which are actually struggling because of the Western powers. They're having to deal with issues they wouldn't normally have to deal with, such as pollution, air pollution, at the same time as dealing with famine because of climate change. It's not a position where people from these countries should have to step in and do anything. All that we should be doing is understanding that not only are we ruining our own lives, but poverty is only going to get worse. Worldwide poverty is only going to get worse if we do not tackle climate change.
But do you think, for example, in like China, and obviously I'm playing devil's advocate here, mm-hmm. but for example in China, which is one of the highest polluters, but also has a massive, massive population that mm-hmm. is undoubtedly not developed. So, you know, they're one of the most developed countries in the world and one of the least developed countries in the world. Can we encourage countries like that to be more, because I think they're going through, I suppose, a stage of industry that we went through 150 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So could you say that we should be encouraged, is it fair to encourage like countries like China and India, which are arguably probably more developed and more well off than countries in like Africa,
mm-hmm.
would it be fair to encourage them?
I think an interesting case to look at is India, because there is a huge wealth gap. There are multi-millionaires at the front of the country doing ridiculously well. Right next to them there's slums where people are dying because of the pollution from the big city skyscrapers. One of the examples in New Delhi is that in one of the slums there was actually more children ended up dying from air and water pollution than they had been from malnutrition and other diseases relating to poverty, which only suggests that there is an issue. But we shouldn't be targeting countries as a whole, because the individual, at the end of the day, doesn't have that much responsibility. What it is these bigger companies, the wealth gap, and the people that are refusing to make changes to their companies, and the fact that governments are not stepping in to put in proper environmental legislation and limits on multinational companies and global companies is ridiculous. I think that's what people should be doing, but it's not targeting singular countries. It's not saying China bad, India bad, England bad. It's saying leaders of all these countries have not got their priorities straight, and that's what they need to be sorting.
And obviously I know you're involved in the kind of political commentary scene in radio. What do you actually think we can do? Like what can the government actually do politically?
I think
what would it be examples?
The first step is to be putting more controls on businesses, on big businesses, Amazon, Google, the big ones.
Yeah.
I think there's a big problem with the impact on military spending as well. I know that's completely other debate. I've gone for hours about military spending and how it's absolutely ridiculous. But the amount of money that goes into the production of goods for military in the US contributes ridiculously to CO2 emissions, because they're constantly producing weapons, which it takes a lot to produce those things. As an individual, all we can do is vote. I think we've got a general election coming up. That is where our responsibility comes into stepping in the government, and the government needs to stand up now and start putting limits on these businesses. The only way that we can sort this climate crisis is if these businesses get proper limits on them, because otherwise they're going to keep polluting the seas, they're going to keep dumping oil, they're going to keep dumping waste, and the people that are going to take the blame are the general citizens who have cut down on meat or who are buying secondhand clothing, the people that are trying their best. And I think that it's ridiculous that we have to take this into our hands. The point of a government is to protect its citizens, and the businesses are endangering the citizens at the moment. So what we need is a solid government-led policy that cuts back on these multi-million, billion as well, pound industries that are killing the earth.
Yeah, I definitely think that really kind of summarizes a lot of the opinions we've heard today. You know, we've heard varying opinions about different aspects of the concept of striking, Greta Thunberg, but I think all everyone I've spoken to today, and the majority of people I have spoken to in general about climate issues, definitely seem to agree that although individuals should be doing something to help, it's a national, international, you know, company-based problem. Mm-hmm. It's a corporation problem. I think someone was saying that, I think Owen was saying 70% of waste in the sea is corporations' waste. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And so, you know, if we drastically change our day-to-day lives, that's only 30%. Yeah. 70% is the side we really need to focus on.
And that's why you should register to vote. So yeah. You can make that change yourself.
Register to vote. Keep on doing what you can. Mm-hmm. Get involved in XR if you would like to. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week, same time, 5 till 6 on a Saturday.
DJ! This is URN University Radio Nottingham.
Looking back, I guess that ignorance was a breeze. I thought I knew everything, but I was naive. Didn't understand until the age of 18. Yeah, even then I was blind. 2012, I remember being in need. True, 2015, you were falling for me. You sent through a love letter for me to read, and it's engraved in my mind. She changed the world, I know, and it's better for it. 4 years later, and look where we really are. Look how far we've come. Look at us now. Oh, we're flying, I finally know I'm here for a reason. Thank you for waiting on me. I'm dying to see her, she's my favorite ever. Thank you for everything. January, baby, I was taking my time. Spending summer and then we'll be good in July. Why can't it be like this for the rest of my life? No, I wouldn't mind. Cause she changed the world, I know, and it's better for it. 4 years later, and look where we are. So this one's for you. Cause even when my worst traits get in the way, you're here to help me feel safe. I don't need to be